Hello, once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me in the Bettors Box of the BangTheBook.com's MLB Betting Podcast for Monday, May 6th. I'm your host, Adam Burke. This and every edition of the Bettors Box, presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB200 is that promo code, 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook, 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. Monday, Thursday format here, as you know, with the Bettors Box. It is Monday. That means I got a couple of questions here from the Monday mailbag. You can hit me up on Twitter at Skating Tripods or email me, adam@bangthebook.com, with your Monday mailbag questions. And also, too, adam@bangthebook.com via email will get you on the list for the notes for each edition of the Bettors Box. So if that's something that you're interested in, reach out, let me know. I'll put you on the list. You can start getting those as early as today. My MLB picks and tips piece every day over at bangthebook.com. Some better fortunes here of late. Hopefully we can keep that rolling. Also over there at the website, Parker Michaels' daily NHL picks, NBA picks from our talented cast of writers. I'll have a golf preview and a daily fantasy preview for the AT&T Byron Nelson this week. And I'll also get the PGA Championship one up this week as well. We've got a great tennis preview from Big Ten Watto. We'll have NASCAR previews for the weekend, soccer previews this week. We got a lot of great stuff going on over at bangthebook.com, where we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. All right, we'll start things off with the Monday mailbag today. Then we'll go beyond the box score, take a look down the lines. I'll give you my pick for tonight's action and then preview this week ahead. So lots of stuff coming your way here on today's program. We actually start with a college football question here today from Rick via email. It says, my question is non-baseball related. I've developed some slightly better than simple models that have helped me beat the book at a consistent 54 to 55% rate. I think I've narrowed it down to a strength of schedule issue and not waiting blowout games against Division I-A schools enough. So my question is this. Do you know any good websites that publish quality strength of schedule data or rankings? I've tried using Football Insider or Football Outsiders, but their integers are too small. And Sagarin seems to be the holy grail, but he uses a super outdated website that doesn't import into Google Sheets effortlessly. This question can be best answered by saying, please, one of my listeners or somebody you know out there, please, please, please make a KenPom or Bart Torvik equivalent for college football. That would be absolutely outstanding. I would donate to something like that. I would love to see something like that put together. That would be absolutely fantastic to see a KenPom or a Torvik site for college football. But the best thing I can throw at you, Rick, here is, you know, Bill Connolly uses strength of schedule in his S&P metrics, specifically in his resume S&P plus rankings. That would be the thing that I would look at. That would be something like a Bill Connolly. I'm not sure where he gets his data, but I know that his data very, very well respected out there in the business. I know Brad Powers has been working on his strength of schedule. He's been tweeting some stuff out about that. But no, you know, you would think with college football being just as massive as it is, there would be some better resources out there for these types of things. I don't know of any offhand. If any listeners do, please let me know on Twitter at Skating Tripods or adam@bangthebook.com. Maybe you do your own. Maybe you do your own and you want to share them with us and help the community out. I know everybody would greatly appreciate that. But as far as anything that I know of outside of Bill Connolly, not really. It does seem to be very, very limited. Phil Steele will publish his strength of schedule once the magazine comes out, but everybody's using those. So, you know, obviously you want to take that into the equation when you consider something that everybody's using. But, you know, outside of Connolly and Steele and then, you know, some of the handicappers and what they have out there, I don't really know offhand. So, again, hoping somebody makes a KenPom or a Bart Torvik site for college football. I don't know of one yet. If you have one or you're working on one, be very happy to find that out. Sorry I can't help you more with that question, Rick, but hopefully you do find something that winds up working for you. And like I said, give Connolly a try. Reach out to somebody like Brad Powers, see if maybe he's willing to share a couple of different things, something like that. That'd be the best course of action I can think of right now until somebody comes up with a really good college football analytics site for us. Got a question here from Joe via email. I found some successfully pairing two power teams together in a parlay. For example, one unit on the Astros minus 160 and Dodgers minus 170, instead of risking more on a single play to win a minimal amount. Do you like to place parlay bets or do you mainly stick to placing single bets? This is always a good question, especially with big favorites, because in Major League Baseball, as I've talked about before, they've been a cash cow over the last 4 years. Favorites of minus 181 or higher. I'll run through these numbers again. I've talked about them here before on the show. But minus 181 or higher in 2018, 436 and 156, 73.6% average line, -228.7. $100 bettors up $9,000, according to the closing numbers and the data over in the Killer Sports database. 2017, 301 and 111, 73.1% average line, -224.8. $100 bettors up $5,900 there. 2016, 294 and 121, 70.8% average line, -220.2. $100 bettors were up a little over $3,000 there. Then in 2015, $100 bettors were up a little under $4,000. Now this year, in the early going, this has not been a profitable angle. Favorites of minus 181 or higher so far this year, only 36 and 24, that's 60%, well below the break-even rate, -222.3, the average line there. $100 bettors are down $1,700 so far with those big favorites. And in fact, if we extend that out to minus 200 or higher favorites, only 28 and 18, only 60.9%. The average line, minus 232.1 there. $100 bettors down about 14 units with minus 200 or higher favorites. So far this season, the trend has been bucked. Now, of course, in April, a lot of times people do talk about betting a lot of underdogs. Everybody's kind of on equal footing, so on and so forth. So we'll see what these numbers look like as we go throughout the season here. But so far, big favorites in Major League Baseball have not been a good bet for you. We'll see if that changes, but it has been a losing proposition. Again, for the last 4 years, it's been very profitable. This year, not so much. So with that in mind, maybe you do want to consider parlaying them together just to limit your risk a little bit. But keep in mind what's going to happen here. Let's say you're putting two minus 200 favorites together in a parlay. That's an implied probability of 66.67% on each minus 200 favorite. If you put the two of them together, your implied probability of winning that ticket goes down to 44.45%. So that's the risk management question that you have here. Would you rather bet each one individually going to win two-thirds of the time or put them both together and win that ticket about 44.5% of the time? That's up to you. It's up to your bankroll size. You know, if you don't want to withstand those 2x losses, betting the minus 200 to win 100, then okay. Then it makes sense for you. It makes sense for you. But keep in mind what you're doing to that bet. Yes, you're lowering your risk amount and increasing your reward. But you're also actively making it less likely that you're going to have a winning ticket. So that's the big question here for you. And I do think money line parlay favorites do make some sense. It's something I've done in the NHL a little bit more frequently than Major League Baseball. But again, with the lack of success here for those big money line favorites, you can look at it two different ways. You can look at it in the sense of, do I want to risk more to win less when they're not winning that much? Or do I want to try to put a couple of them together, limit my exposure that way, hope that the two of them come through? Yeah, that's up to you. That's up to your bankroll management. It's a very important risk management question that you have to ask yourself. And if you, you know, aren't in a position to be betting 200 to win 100, and you do decide that you want to parlay them, just keep in mind what you're doing to your chances of winning, you know, that betting ticket. Because by putting the two of them together, you are less likely to win that bet. So again, it's completely up to you. It's something that I have utilized in the past at times, something that I don't utilize a ton in Major League Baseball. But again, if that is something that you want to do, you know, it's your bankroll. You know what your risk tolerance is. Those are the questions that you have to answer for yourself. Yes, it can be profitable. It's been more profitable in the past than it has been this year. And obviously, we'll keep an eye on that and see how that progresses here as the season goes along. One last note here for the Monday mailbag. I had a listener question about half runs on totals. For the life of me, I can't find it. It was sent to me via email. If that was you that sent it, please resubmit your question. I apologize for not keeping track of it better. It was basically about you know, a total goes from 9, maybe minus 120 to 8.5, you know, minus 110 or 8.5, minus 105, something like that. I forget the exact wording of it, but if you sent that question about half runs on totals, please resend it, and I do apologize for losing track of it here in advance of today's show. I will tell you this, I'm probably not going to be able to do an edition of the Bettors Box next Monday. I've got some things I need to do in the morning. Probably won't be able to get to it. Maybe I'll do a much shorter version of it if I can. But for right now, it looks like I would label myself as doubtful on an injury report to do the Bettors Box next Monday. So I do apologize for that. We'll have one Thursday. We'll have one the following Thursday. But I don't think I can do one next Monday. I'll try to let you know in advance, but for the Monday mailbag purposes, I probably won't do one next Monday if I can do the show. So we'll probably just skip it, hold off, do it 2 weeks from today. But in any event, just want to give you a little bit of a heads up on that. All right, let's go beyond the box score here. Got a handful of series and different things to talk about with you. We'll start with a look at the Phillies as they take 2 out of 3 from the Washington Nationals. And, you know, I mentioned this on last week's show, and I mentioned this in the articles as well, that we've seen some money come in against the Nationals here, and they are really up against it offensively. Anthony Rendon's still out. Now Juan Soto is on the injured list as well. And Trey Turner, of course, has been out since earlier in the season. And for Rendon here, you know, he's basically been out since April 21st. He played one game, then hit the IL. I don't know why he played that one game. He could have been retroactive to, you know, April 20th and already been off the injured list if he's ready to go, of course. But in that span, since Rendon's been out, since April 21st, again, that does include the one game that he did play, 231 average, 298 on base, 382 slugging percentage, 140 strikeouts against 42 walks, only 11 non-home run extra base hits, 9 doubles, 2 triples. There's a lot going on with this Nationals team. They got a very good rotation with Scherzer, Strasburg, and Corbin, and I do still like Helixson and Sanchez to a degree. But offensively, they're a mess right now. The bullpen's been a debacle all year long. Davey Martinez is just in way over his head. This is just a mess. This Nationals team is a mess right now. And to make matters worse, I don't know if you saw this on Twitter this morning. Very happy a buddy of mine pointed this out to me. The Nationals had some engine trouble with their plane yesterday trying to get out of Philadelphia. They sat on the tarmac for 7 hours. I sat on the tarmac for about 45 minutes a few months ago, and I was ready to jump out of the plane screaming. It was brutal. 7 hours. I can't imagine that for the life of me. They went back to the team hotel finally in the middle of the night. They were en route to Milwaukee at time of writing. So to make matters worse, they've got a very banged-up lineup, and then they sit on a plane for 7 hours. They're going to play a same-day game in Milwaukee here tonight. Always something for this team. And sometimes those are chemistry building, camaraderie building types of things. I don't think this is one of them. You know, you deal with some travel issues or something like that. Sometimes it brings the team together. I don't think that's the case here at all whatsoever for Washington. This is a pretty toxic situation right now for them. Just not a good look for the Nationals. Didn't have that explosion offensively in the middle game of that series, but overall, bad look for Washington here over the last little while. Now, that being said, the Philadelphia Phillies, they've dropped 20 points in on-base percentage since April 13th, and basically teams are just forcing them to put the ball in play. They do hit some home runs, but their contact quality is really not stellar. So for the Phillies here going forward, when they face pitchers that aren't going to walk them a whole lot, and I am on the Phillies tonight against the Cardinals coming off of a series against the Cubs that did not go well for them, Miles Mikolas, no command here at all this season. So I am going against the grain a little bit in that regard. But going forward, when the Phillies play pitchers that aren't going to give them free passes, I think it's a really tough situation for them because they just don't make a lot of high-quality contact. They need to work counts. They need to hit from ahead in the count to be able to utilize that power production. So the Phillies, the exception being today, and of course, you know, we'll see how that one plays out. But for the Phillies going forward, if they're not going to get walks, I am a little bit worried about them offensively, as again, they've dropped about 20 points on base percentage over the last three and a half weeks. The Red Sox with a 2-game sweep from the White Sox here, and obviously there's not much to add to this. The White Sox aren't a very good team, but Boston with 24 runs scored in this series, 5 home runs in the 2 games, 6 doubles. They're starting to hit for some power. They're starting to get things going offensively. This is what I expected to happen with Boston. Didn't take advantage of it at all in this series with some big numbers that were out there and the Rick Porcello start yesterday. But I'll talk about them later in the show and how I think there are some opportunities here against the Baltimore Orioles early in the week. The Brewers with a sweep of the New York Metropolitans, 3-1 on Friday, 4-3 in 18 innings on Saturday, 3-2 game on Sunday. So the offense has slacked off at Miller Park for the Brewers. They're back to winning low-scoring, one-run games. You know, and they're doing exactly what we would expect with their starters. Brandon Woodruff faced 21 batters. Gio Gonzalez faced 19. A lot of five-and-fly type stuff from this Brewers pitching staff. Zach Davies did go extra on Sunday. I think he faced 28 batters or something like that. But the Mets totally punted that game. Awful lineup from them. Jason Vargas on the mound. Complete punt. We did see a line move in that game. But as far as the Brewers go, we need to keep a very close eye on the attrition rate in their bullpen as this season goes along. Josh Hader has had some command hiccups. I watched it. Game on Friday because we were on the Brewers in that one. He kind of had to labor a little bit in those later innings, had some deep counts in the ninth inning. He's given up some home runs this year as well. I'm watching this Brewers bullpen very closely. If they're in a situation where they've been worked pretty hard over a sustained period of time, and that is what happens. It's great to win games, but when you're winning one-run games, two-run games, stuff like that, you're using those primary relievers over and over and over again. We're kind of seeing some of that with the San Diego Padres right now, where some of their primary relievers kind of having some bumps in the road a little bit. This is something you want to watch for with Milwaukee, I think, in the near term and over the long term. Because this bullpen, I don't think it's as deep as last year's version, especially with Corey Knebel out, especially with Jeremy Jeffress, not really a high leverage option right now. Keep an eye on that for the Brewers. Some bullpen attrition with a lot of workload last year, a lot of workload already this year. I got something we definitely want to keep a very close eye on here as we move forward. How about the Chicago Cubs? They sweep the St. Louis Cardinals here over the weekend. Missed opportunity for us on Friday. The Cardinals were off of a late night, had a long rain delay in D.C., early arrival to the park. Kyle Hendricks throws an 81-pitch complete game. Michael Wacha collapses in the middle innings on Saturday. Then they get blown out in the third game. And I will say this. I think the Cubs are going to be a little bit overvalued off of this sweep. I thought the Cardinals were a team that was kind of in line to come back to the pack a little bit. We're seeing a big move on the Cubs today. Sandy Alcantara for the Marlins, Cole Hamels going for the Cubs. But I think the Cardinals were kind of a little bit of smoke and mirrors. Offensively, they've been very good. The bullpen is a regression candidate. I've talked about that a lot. And the rotation is really teetering right now. Jack Flaherty has not been as dominant as I expected. Adam Wainwright is a hope and pray kind of guy. Miles Mikolas has not pitched well. Michael Wacha is having all these walk issues this year that we're not accustomed to seeing. No Carlos Martinez. Dakota Hudson allows a lot of guys on base. No Alex Reyes, at least to this point. The Cardinals, I don't want to say that they're on borrowed time necessarily, but I did think that they were overachieving a little bit. I think the Cubs caught them at the right time, especially coming out of that Thursday game. So I think the Cubs are a little bit overvalued right now. Offensively, they are doing very, very well. But I do think that from a pitching standpoint, the Cubs are kind of overachieving both in the rotation and in the bullpen. A lot of guys in the bullpen getting away with middle pitches, stuff like that. I think the Cubs are overvalued right now. We see that today. I don't have the stones to play the Miami offense, but I do think that will be the case here in this series against Miami and also as we go forward a little bit here. One thing I do want to mention about the Cardinals, I did go against them, as I mentioned, with the Phillies here today. 5-12 for St. Louis in their last 17 games immediately following a series against the Cubs. Now, I do wish they hadn't gotten blown out on Sunday because that'll, you know, obviously keep them very focused here today. But still, kind of coming down off of playing an arch rival has been a difficult thing for the Cardinals here. 5-12 in their last 17 games. An angle to consider for today. An angle to consider after they play the Cubs going forward, because that was their first series against the Cubs for this season. They still have 16 games left against Chicago for the rest of the year. Finally, one more series here to talk about beyond the box score. The Padres avoided a sweep by walking off on Hunter Renfro's grand slam yesterday. Ironically enough, won the first five on Friday and Saturday. Then the bullpen cracked a little bit. Kirby Yates giving up runs back-to-back days. Robbie Erlin with a tough appearance on Sunday. He was in his first back-to-back of the season, threw 35 pitches on Saturday, came back and struggled on Sunday. Could be a live betting opportunity for you there to fade Robbie Erlin, you know, converted starter, when he makes those back-to-back appearances. Again, it's only one, but it's one of those things where it's very challenging to have the right type of mindset and the right type of durability in your arm to come back-to-back days. Erlin, not a guy that's really ever had to do it. That did not work out for him in that appearance on Sunday. Of course, Renfro bailed him out with the grand slam, but keep that in mind here for the Padres as, you know, as they get some bullpen attrition as well. And something else I want to mention from a live betting standpoint, when you've got these teams that have won a lot of close games, that have really relied a lot on those primary relievers, when they're in a game and they're trailing by a run or two, look to live bet the run line on the other side. Because what's going to happen is they're going to go to guys that they don't normally go to, hoping that they can keep the game close. And those guys, generally speaking, do struggle a little bit in those scenarios. Or maybe they'll go to a guy who is a primary reliever, not pitching with that same mindset, that same adrenaline as he would if he was protecting a lead. We saw this a lot with the Brewers last year, where if they didn't use Hader or Knebel or somebody like that, you know, they would wind up losing by multiple runs. So that is a live betting angle for you as well. If you've got a tired bullpen that's not going to use primary guys to keep the game close or use them in a tie game situation, you can live bet the other side, because a lot of times those teams will either add on or take advantage by not facing the best relievers on the opposition. So a good live betting angle that I've used to my advantage and something you want to keep in mind here as we go forward as well. One thing I thought I would take a look at here beyond the box score is looking at pitcher types against team matchups. So you look at the league-wide batting average on fastballs here this season. It's 266. The Cubs lead the league at 301, also lead the league in weighted on base average at 400. The Cardinals are batting 298 on fastballs with a 375 wOBA. That ranks fifth. The Twins are batting 295 on fastballs with a 399 wOBA. That's second in the league. The White Sox batting 291. They're fourth in batting average on fastballs, eighth in weighted on base average. So when you get a pitcher that's maybe 55%+ fastball usage against the Cubs, Cardinals, Twins, White Sox, teams like that, maybe look for some team total overs. Maybe look for some game overs. Or look for some spots to play those money lines as well. Some teams hit fastballs better than others. You would think at the major league level that everybody would be a good fastball hitter. That's not the case. Some teams hit fastballs well. Some teams don't. A lot of times the better offenses in baseball will be the ones that hit fastballs well. So the Cubs, Cardinals, Twins, and White Sox all doing very well on fastballs this season. So if they face a pitcher that's 55% fastball usage or higher, maybe you want to look to play team total overs or play the sides with those teams. The worst teams in hitting fastballs this year from a batting average and a wOBA standpoint: the Blue Jays at 231 with a 311 wOBA, Giants 232 average, 300 wOBA, Marlins 235 average, 291 wOBA, Tigers 236 and a 313 wOBA, Indians 238 and a 319 wOBA, the Reds 241 and a 334 wOBA, although they are on the rise after feasting a little bit on Giants pitching over the weekend. But again, those six teams struggle against fastballs. So if they face a guy that throws a lot of fastballs and has a good one, those are teams you probably want to look to fade. Whether you play the under team totals, under game totals, or go against those teams, the Blue Jays, Giants, Marlins, Tigers, Indians, and Reds all having lots of problems with fastballs this season. Now, with this baseball savant query, let's add another layer to it. The league batting average on fastballs of 94-plus miles per hour is 245. Now, I think 94-plus miles per hour of fastball velocity, I would call that above average. A lot of guys sit in that 91-92 range, even today's game. I would say 94 would be above average velocity. Anything 97-plus is elite velocity. 94 to 96, I would say, is above average fastball velocity. And again, We see the league batting average on fastballs in general, 266. League batting average on fastballs of 94 plus miles per hour, 245. So obviously that shows the impact that velocity has from a batting average standpoint. So the best teams here on above average fastball velocity, again, 94 plus miles per hour is what I'm going with here. The Yankees at 308, Diamondbacks at 304, Dodgers 282, the Braves 277. Now the bottom of the barrel here, the Blue Jays at 194, which is why I'm on the under tonight in the Blue Jays versus Rangers game. Martin Perez averaging just shy of 96 miles per hour on his fastball. The Blue Jays are not hitting high-velocity fastballs well this year. So that's an angle that I'm looking to play here tonight with the under in that Twins and Blue Jays game. Indians at 209, Rangers at 210, Rockies at 211, Tigers 213, Mariners 218. So these are teams that, sure, they can hit fastballs when they're not thrown all that hard. And this makes a lot of sense. I mean, the Rangers hit for a ton of power. How do you generate power? Well, you get the bat head out, and you can do that by pulling lower velocity fastballs. This makes a lot of sense. The Rockies, if they face pitch-to-contact dudes with average fastball velocities at Coors Field, that's a play I'm definitely going to look to make. So that's something you want to keep in mind here. And, you know, again, I mean, we're talking about matchup-specific betting angles. Will these come through all the time? No. But the expectation would be that these teams that hit high velocity would have a better chance at driving in runs, would have a better chance at creating run-scoring opportunities than the teams that can't hit high-velocity fastballs. And again, really all we're trying to do here with betting baseball is figure out which team has the most chances at scoring and hope that they cash in those opportunities. Those are the different things that you'd like to look at here when it comes to betting on Major League Baseball. Now let's talk about teams against breaking balls. And by breaking balls, I mean sliders, curveballs, knuckle curves, knuckleballs, and EFIS pitches. And there are some things that get classified as EFISes. EFI? EFISes? Whatever it is. Anyway, the league batting average on breaking balls, primarily sliders, curveballs, and knuckle curves, is 216. The Diamondbacks are at 260. They're a good breaking ball lineup so far this season. How about the Baltimore Orioles? Second in batting average on breaking balls at 247. Astros 244, Yankees 243, Braves 241. This is definitely an area where the best offenses usually shine in this department because they've got the guys with the best bat control. So again, the top offenses in batting average on breaking balls, Diamondbacks, Orioles, Astros, Yankees, Braves. The worst offenses on breaking balls, the Indians are batting 158, primarily on sliders, curveballs, and knuckle curves. Padres 169. Reds 173, Rockies 193, the Twins 194. So how interesting is this, that the Minnesota Twins hit fastballs extremely well and don't hit breaking balls well? That's a very clear-cut betting angle for you. If you've got a pitcher that's, you know, 40% fastball usage going up against the Twins, he probably has a pretty good chance. If we look at Jake Odorizzi and Jay Happ, the game that I played on Saturday for the first five, the Twins had good success against Jay Happ. Jay Happ throws his fastball 70% of the time. The Twins are a great fastball lineup. They're not good against everything else. Well, specifically breaking balls. I'll have to look and see how they are in off-speed pitches like changeups and splitters and stuff like that. But they're not good at hitting sliders, curveballs, and knuckle curves. So if they're facing a guy that's a 40% curveball guy, that's probably going to be a tough matchup for them. And they did have some of those when they took on the Houston Astros, for example. So you can find some of these matchup-specific betting opportunities in the sense of looking at, again, teams like the Twins that hit fastballs, don't hit breaking balls. I think this can be very important information for you. Adam@bangthebook.com via email if you want to get on the list for notes. All right, let's take a look down the lines here. Talk about some line moves dating back to Friday. We saw a fade of Sonny Gray in that Giants versus Reds game. Maybe some people bought into the Tyler Beede hype. I know I did. Had the under in that game. It was dead in the water by the third inning. And they almost tripled up the total for that one. But in any event, money did come in against Sonny Gray in that one. Saw some Padres money hit the board on Friday. That was Eric Lauer going for them against Clayton Kershaw. Kershaw pitched well. The Padres did win the first five, but then had that bullpen blow up at the end. So money come in on Tyler Glasnow. Tyler Glasnow has become like Gerrit Cole. No matter the matchup, no matter the line, money is coming in on Tyler Glasnow. It's just happening start after start after start. So if Tyler Glasnow is pitching, go ahead, get out in front of that line move. Decide if you want to buy back at it a little bit, maybe partial hedge, or just let that closing line value ride. One more here on Friday, the Pirates and Joe Musgrove were faded. That was the Oakland A's in town for that one. A's put on a hitting display, won that game in runaway fashion. Not really sure the reason for that line move against Musgrove there, but you know, still just one that came in. And you know, the Pirates right now, they're not in good shape. Clint Hurdle not managing the team well, not managing the pitching staff well at all. They've had some injury concerns to deal with also, as we've talked about before. The Pirates are just in a tough way right now. On Saturday, we did see a little bit of Patrick Corbin money come in, but it's very hard to back that Washington Nationals lineup right now, as well as that Washington Nationals bullpen. We saw a fade on Saturday of Tanner Roark. Now, this one didn't work out, but I tend to agree. Roark is a fade candidate to me here. Unfortunately, his next start coming against San Francisco on the road, so good pitchers parked there for him. But I probably will look to fade Tanner Roark here in the very near future. Saw Joey Lucchesi bet into a favorite that was against Rich Hill and the Dodgers. I'll talk about that more in a couple of minutes here. Saw money against Jay Happ at home. I think we could see this a lot. Jay Happ pitched very well in Anaheim and San Francisco. Comes back home, does not pitch well against the Twins. He's a guy I expect to have pretty big home road splits this season. We'll probably see a lot of money coming against him in his home starts going forward. Saw money come in on the Indians as heavy chalk. Those with Carlos Carrasco on the mound. For them, Mike Leake going for the Mariners in that one. Again, I'll talk about that line move in a second as well. Saw money come in on the Royals. That was a fade of Tyson Ross. Tyson Ross did not pitch well. Neither did the Tigers bullpen. Royals hung a 15 spot, I believe, in that game. Money coming in on Homer Bailey there in that one. Talk about that line move in a minute as well. Sunday, we saw a big fade of Julio Teheran. That was to back Pablo Lopez for the Marlins. Lopez was fantastic. The Marlins just didn't score for him. It's kind of the story of their season, not really scoring for any of their starting pitchers here so far. Saw a big move on Zach Davies. And this one was really interesting on Sunday because Zach Davies is probably the biggest regression candidate in Major League Baseball right now, in my estimation. But the Mets completely punted that game. Awful lineup. A Danny Hecheverria batting leadoff. They had some low on base percentage guys at the top. Christian Yelich was back in the lineup for the Brewers. Of course, he hit a tank in his first game back, or his first start back, I should say. But, you know, that was a move predicated on the lineup. And truth be told, we're seeing a lot more of those this season, or maybe I'm just noticing them a lot more. Maybe it's the influence of the modeling crowd in the betting market. But when we're seeing guys out of the lineup, whether it's a Yelich or a Goldschmidt or, you know, guys hurt, something like that, we're seeing a lot of line moves against those teams, against those lineups. That was the case on Sunday with one of them. The Mets just trotted out a dumpster fire of a lineup with Jason Vargas on the mound, and money hit the board on the Brewers, and they did come through. But to see money on Zach Davies, certainly very interesting. So money on Herman Marquez on Sunday. He's still struggling at Coors Field, though. We'll see if that's tempered a little bit going into his next start at home. Also saw a big fade of Rick Porcello against Dylan Covey and the Chicago White Sox. That one didn't work out at all. The Red Sox hanging a big number there for Porcello. Porcello, a guy that started very bad. I've backed off the fade. He's pitched fairly well here of late. So good timing to get off the Rick Porcello fade train. Monday, we're seeing some line movement here with that Nationals-Brewers game, with the Washington travel troubles. As I mentioned, Cole Hamels getting bet up into a bigger favorite against the Marlins and Sandy Alcantara. Marlins are terrible. It just is what it is. Another fade of CC Sabathia today. That's with Felix Hernandez and the Mariners in town. A little bit tempted to play CC tonight. I'm not going to do it, but again, money coming in against him. And over the last couple of years, we've seen a steady stream of money against CC, and it really hasn't worked out. One other line move here, Blake Snell taking money for the Rays. In fact, my pick comes from that game, but I'm taking the over here in tonight's Diamondbacks and Rays game, over 7.5. Merrill Kelly is a pretty big regression candidate to me. Faring very well on ground balls. His ground ball batting average, one of the best in baseball. The Rays hit a lot of high-velocity ground balls, so a good night for that to regress. Blake Snell against a right-handed heavy lineup. Has a little bit of a home run issue this year. Diamondbacks adding another hitter to the order as well. You can read more in my article over at bangthebook.com. Now, I mentioned with those line moves here of Luke Casey, of Carrasco, of Tyson Ross, I'm going to give you a very important tip. A very important tip. You may want to rewind and listen to this again or just subscribe to the notes at bangthebook.com. Go to baseballsavant.com. Click on leaderboards, top of the page. Click in the drop-down box, and then under pitching, go to expected statistics. Set the minimum number of plate appearances to 100. In the far right column, sort by diff under quality of contact plus strikeouts plus walks. That diff, D-I-F-F, is the difference between WOBA and expected WOBA per StatCast. Now, I mentioned this on last week's show that we're not seeing the same degree of ERA, FIP, and xFIP moves that we've seen in the past. We're seeing line moves predicated on expected WOBA. I know for a fact that there are modelers out there that I greatly respect that have xWOBA incorporated into their models. We will see lots of line moves on that going forward. We saw a big move on Carlos Carrasco over the weekend. He had a big gap in his WOBA and his expected WOBA. Eduardo Rodriguez, same thing. Big line move on him in that White Sox series. Joey Lucchesi, same thing on him. Big gap between his weighted on base average and his expected weighted on base average. Tyson Ross was a regression candidate. Money came in against him to back Homer Bailey, of all people. Homer effing Bailey taking money in the market because of Tyson Ross's signs of regression in his expected WOBA. So again, baseballsavant.com. Click on leaderboards. Click in the drop-down box. It's going to say, I think it says exit velocity in barrels or something like that. In that box, go to under pitching, expected statistics. Set the minimum plate appearances to 100 or 150 because you want to take relievers out of the equation just to make it a little bit more user-friendly for you. Sort by diff, far right column, under quality of contact plus strikeouts plus walks. That is the WOBA to xWOBA difference. On the high side, when you sort by diff, those are guys that are in line for positive regression. At the bottom of the list, those are guys in line for negative regression. It's a very simple handicapping tool you can use to get in front of line moves and play on that expectation of positive or negative regression. At baseballsavant.com, where you're going to find the WOBA to xWOBA difference. Line moves based on that. Well-respected modelers using that to their advantage. Very easy for you to go and check that out over at baseballsavant.com. Sign up for my notes, adam@bangthebook.com. It's got the instructions to show you how to get there. All right, so for the week ahead, four series I'm taking a look at here. I mentioned I would talk about the Red Sox again, so let's do that for their series against the Baltimore Orioles. Josh Smith, John Means tonight, David Price, David Hess on Tuesday, Chris Sale, Andrew Cashner on Wednesday. Look, I don't talk much about playing run lines. This is a spot to do it, I think. The Orioles pitching staff is atrocious. They've given up a ton of home runs. They're setting records for home runs allowed. My one concern, my one complaint with the Red Sox offense was that they weren't maximizing their high velocity contact enough with doubles and home runs. Well, they've started to do that. They still have a long way to go. They still have more positive regression coming in that department. Why not this week? At Oriole Park, great park factor against a terrible pitching staff. John Means, probably the best guy in that rotation right now. So maybe he fares okay tonight. But against Hess and Cashner, Red Sox run lines, alt run lines. I think these could be a couple of big-time blowouts Tuesday and Wednesday. You get Minnesota splits against Baltimore, then against everybody else. It's just a sign, an indication of how bad this Baltimore pitching staff is. The Red Sox are a positive regression candidate offensively. They're starting to hit for more power. This series could be blowout central, especially on Tuesday and Wednesday. So I'd look for some alt run lines or playing the -1.5s here with Boston. Again, obviously, you know, these can be lower risk wagers for the alt run lines if you want. You know, the -2.5, probably in the +200 range, +225, +250, something like that. So lower bet amount to win a higher bet amount, you know, half unit to win a unit, something like that. I think there could be some alt run line opportunities here if you have those available at your book for this Red Sox versus Orioles series. I think the Red Sox beat the shit out of Baltimore this week. I think they get some of that positive offensive regression. They keep that train going. Again, maybe this doesn't work out, but that's for this series. Braves-Dodgers here. Max Fried, Walker Buehler tonight. Mike Foltynewicz, Hyunjin Ryu tomorrow. Kevin Gausman and Clayton Kershaw on Wednesday. Will Walker Buehler start putting this thing together? I mean, I've been waiting for it. You know, he's far enough away from spring training at this point in time that he should kind of have it together. But he's off to a very slow start here. Tough lineup again in the Atlanta Braves. We'll see how he fares with that one. I guess it's also a tough spot for Mike Foltynewicz. Only his third start. Dodgers own righties. Tough spot for him. Kevin Gausman, maybe a tough spot for him as well, going up against Kershaw and against this Dodgers offense. The Dodgers have not seen many right-handed pitchers lately. They were very, very strong against righties early in the year, have gotten a lot of lefties of late. They get one tonight in Max Fried. But getting back to a couple of righties here, maybe that's something that does benefit the Dodgers a little bit at the tail end of this series. Diamondbacks and Rays. Merrill Kelly, Blake Snell, Clark gets his first major league start against an opener on Tuesday for the Rays. Then Robbie Ray and Chuckles Morton on Wednesday. Clark was a minor league starter, so he's relatively stretched out, has one three-inning relief appearance with a save, actually, in his first major league appearance, even though he's a starter. But he's a pitch-to-contact type guy. That's very scary for me against an American League team. But I will say this, you know, even though I'm on the over tonight in this Kelly and Snell game, you know, the Diamondbacks are a team that, you know, they've hit a lot of hard contact this year. I've talked about them a lot with our exit velocity updates on Thursdays, lots of positive results on high velocity contact. Well, the Rays don't allow a lot of high velocity contact, a lot of high spin rates for their pitchers. They do a lot of things to really stay off the barrel. This could be a regression series for the Diamondbacks. And again, I do like the over a little bit tonight, but I think on Tuesday and Wednesday, things could be a little bit more challenging for them. The opener again on Tuesday, we'll see if it's Yanni Chirinos or somebody else that's the bulk reliever. Maybe it's, I don't think it would be Jalen Beeks, because you want a righty going up against the Diamondbacks. But either way, you know, we'll see what happens here in this series. But should be a very interesting one, to say the least. And then Morton's a tough matchup for a right-handed heavy lineup like the Diamondbacks. So maybe a getaway day under on Wednesday, maybe a play on the Rays, something like that. I guess it could be a very interesting series for the Diamondbacks. Finally, one more here. The Reds make the long trip out west to Oakland to take on the A's. They'll take on San Francisco next weekend, so a rematch of the series that we just saw. Tyler Mahle, Mike Fiers on Tuesday. Sonny Gray, I got it right this time. And Brett Anderson on Wednesday. Tanner Roark and Chris Bassett on Thursday. Could be an under candidate here on Tuesday with a pretty high total with Fiers and Mahle. Fiers goes back home. Mayle's a guy that's much better against righties than lefties. He's got a pretty well-defined platoon split. He could have some success against this right-handed heavy Oakland lineup on Tuesday. Sonny Gray making his return to Oakland should be an interesting storyline there. I like Oakland on Thursday. Chris Bassett on the mound, Tanner Roark, again, a little bit of a regression candidate. In my estimation, day game, so the ball should carry a little bit better. We'll see what that price looks like on Oakland on Thursday, but Bassett over Roark is one that I'm kind of looking at for Thursday. Will be chalky, though, so we'll have to keep that in mind. Of course, we'll see, you know, if this A's bullpen kind of figure things out as well, because they've had quite a few difficulties here this season. Again, Adam at bangthebook.com to get the notes for the show. Likely no bettors box next Monday, so hold off on your mailbag questions. If I do one, I wouldn't do the mailbag anyway, just to get out a little bit shorter of a show. But you'll hear another edition of the bettors box on Thursday. Also, we'll get a UFC preview up with Christian Pina here on either Wednesday or Thursday, so you can keep an eye out for that. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. And remember that you will never strike out when you're in the bettors box.